The demilitarization of the police is one of the many reforms racial justice protesters have been calling for over the last couple of months. On Tuesday, the Senate rejected a bipartisan proposal attached to the annual defense bill that would have stopped the Pentagon from supplying some surplus military equipment to police departments. Since the 1990s, a Defense Department program known as 1033 has supplied more than 8,000 local police agencies with more than $7 billion worth of surplus military equipment. That was part of the National Defense Authorization Act. Much of that equipment, like armored vehicles, riot gear, and tear gas, have been used by local police at many of the racial justice protests across the country. While the Senate rejected the broader proposal, they did reintroduce limitations to 1033 that the Obama administration made in 2014 after police in Ferguson used military equipment during the protests sparked by the police killing of Michael Brown. President Trump had rolled back these changes when he got into office. Here to talk about the militarization of the police and where the 1033 program stands is Stuart Schrader, a lecturer in sociology at Johns Hopkins University and the author of Badges Without Borders. Stuart, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
We listed a couple of types of military equipment, but let's clarify. I mean, what are the most common types of equipment that police are using these days?
During the protests, we've seen police using everyday equipment that they might use in normal operations, obviously batons. We've seen tear gas, and we've seen some very technologically sophisticated weapons like so-called sound cannons. Some of these materials are coming from surplus stocks from the Department of Defense, but many of them are not. They're just in the closets in police departments ready to be deployed as necessary.
Did police departments across the country ask for these types of equipment to be sent to them, or are they just being sent to them as surplus?
Well, I think historically, police have asked the Department of Defense for surplus. It's not a recent phenomenon, and they've often tried to make up for shortfalls in their budgets and their ability to buy the types of equipment they want or think they need, by imploring the federal government to help them out. Obviously, the federal government has a lot of money and spends a lot of money on this type of material, and police have become quite adept at making these types of demands to get this surplus material from the military. And right now, anytime the police get the surplus material, they do have to make a specific request, although what they request is not always what they get.
I covered the unrest in Ferguson, Missouri after the killing of Michael Brown, Stuart, and it was the first time that I had witnessed and actually was tear gassed and saw rubber bullets and saw tanks and law enforcement agents in fatigues and flashbangs. I mean, it was, to say the least, an intense situation, I think, one that was very surprising to witness in an American city. Stuart, how has the use of military equipment by police affected policing in this country and engaging with communities that are protesting? Because that seems to be when this is really rolled out.
Well, I think the protests have highlighted the wide adoption of this material. It seems in so many cities, like, police are able to come to these protests outfitted in this military style gear, often even in camouflage body armor and on these armored trucks. But I think what the protests have shown to people, because the police have this material, is that it's not just being used in protests. The police are using this type of military gear, which of course is obtained under the premise that it might be needed in crisis or emergency situations, but police are using this gear in everyday situations. Oftentimes, once they have it, they will use it in serving warrants and making standard arrests. And that is quite frightening, and I think also raises questions for a lot of people about whether this type of material is compatible with the types of constitutional protections that most people hope police are abiding by.
Well, and it also just the tone and the environment. I mean, seeing and witnessing four or five tear gas canisters being, you know, around your car, and, you know, I'll never forget seeing people running into the McDonald's on West Florissant Avenue trying to find milk to clear their eyes. We're talking about, you know, families and young children and other folks who were out protesting. So, you know, there have been lots of concerns, obviously, about the safety, public safety, as this type of technology is deployed. And Stuart, a couple of weeks ago, I hosted a Facebook forum on the future of policing, during which we spoke to Houston Police Chief Art Acevedo. And this is what he had to say about the use of military equipment.
Because it's not about the equipment. It's about the proper use of the equipment, the circumstances, the policy and the use of the equipment, and the proper supervision, command, and control.
What do you make of that, Art Acevedo's comment there?
I think it's certainly true that a lot of the military surplus gear that gets passed on to police forces doesn't come with training in its use. But I'm skeptical that proper training or using the materials according to manufacturers' specifications is actually going to fix the problem. What we're seeing, particularly with the use of tear gas in these protests, is that it's not being used in a de-escalatory fashion. It's not being used to defend police. Oftentimes, police seem to be using it in an offensive fashion. They're using it to escalate the confrontation, and it's inciting protesters. And that's not just about the training in its proper usage. That's about the attitudes of the officers and the more broad political situation and the political mobilization that police themselves are being used in to suppress and quell dissent.
Stuart Schrader is a lecturer in sociology at Johns Hopkins University and the author of Badges Without Borders, How Global Counterinsurgency Transformed American Policing. Stuart, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.